Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator. Thanks so much for downloading this episode of Art for Your Ear. I am so excited about today's interview. I'm talking to Peregrine Honig. Did you watch Bravo's Work of Art? Well, I did, and Peregrine was on it. Reality TV and art? Yes, that is my nirvana. Anyway, it's almost like Peregrine and I are having a real coffee date today. She's meeting me in a cafe via Skype, so please forgive the clinking, clanking, and random people laughing in the background. Okay, pour yourself a cup of coffee and join us in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Peregrine.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for asking.
I am so excited to talk to you. I feel actually, like, to be honest, totally nervous.
Really?
Yes.
I'm nervous, so you can't be nervous.
You're nervous? Why are you nervous?
Oh, you know, it's an interview. You want to sound intelligent, so... that's always nerve-wracking.
Well, because we've kind of had something to do with each other, because you're in my book, Creative Block, but we've never actually talked.
Mm-mm. No, this is our first conversation.
I know, and so I'm kind of fangirling out because, well, you know, work of art and all.
And all.
So a few years ago, you were on the show, on Bravo's Work of Art. And you know what was so funny was that I'd actually written about you already once, and then that show started, and I thought, oh, cool, I'll watch this show. And they were doing the credits or the little intro thing, and they were showing all the artists. And they showed you, and I was like, oh, my God, I've written about her. And then I was invested. I was cheering for you all the way through. And
thank
you were
you.
So good on it. You should have won.
Thank you. I feel like I did win a lot. Just being on it, I had a really interesting experience, and yeah, television is such an amazing medium, and it really changed the way that I see things and watch things. And being under surveillance while you make your work is a really fractured experience. And
well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, what you know, like basically, it's a televised critique. Which sounds like my nightmare. Like, I didn't even like critiques in art school. And so what was it like being, having to wait? I'm going to ask so many, I have so many questions about this show. I'm a little bit of a reality TV junkie. So you mix that with art and like that show was like, you know, gold for me. So what was it like, A, getting those assignments and having such a short time to make them? And then B, like, yeah, getting... you know, critical feedback from people like Jerry Saltz on TV?
You know, it's funny that I was in New York after I had found out that I'd gotten into the first round. And I believe it was like 7,000 people auditioned for that show for
wow.
The first season. And just like any time that you go into your studio to make something, you come with your whole history of making something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, anything that you do that involves, I would say, your creative identity is going to be affected by everything that you've done and thought about and made and curated and considered up until that point. And so when I told my New York, I was showing with Larissa Goldstein, and she was talking about the show, and I kind of already knew that I was to some point with it, maybe being on the show, and just listening to this really intelligent New York art dealer who had, you know, my work in her stable, her just being like, oh, you wouldn't believe who's on it. And I didn't know who was going to be on it. So it was this kind of secret upper, kind of like highbrow, midbrow thing. Like, it was, I am not a reality TV show watcher, which I think kind of saved my ass, because I didn't expect to be a character. And for, you know, there were a few people that were really committed to reality TV or felt that they needed to mirror what they had seen on reality TV.
Right.
And so they didn't stay on very long. And because I'm not saying that I'm hindered by reality TV. I'm a big fan of pop culture, and at the time I was really wanting to see what it was like to be on the other side of pop culture. And so I went in just thinking, oh, well, I'm going to audition for this reality TV show. I'm going to see what it's like to be in pop culture. And I got on, right?
Wow.
So I guess it's not the same as a residency. It kind of felt like a really long road trip.
Oh, right? My gosh.
Like a really, really long road trip with a lot of people. And then people just, you know, got dropped off at different stations or different states and like that. And you kind of go crazy. There's really no natural light, and you can't listen to music because of copyright, and you can't have books. So there's no books, and there has to be a consistent light so they can tell an even narration. But, you know, I got access to people who I now consider to be my friends or that are part of my life. Like, you know, I really, you know, I consult with Jerry Saltz. I consider him to be a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's an interesting way to connect to different people in the world, because it's almost like you have this very strange private experience that's been super publicized.
Right.
And you know, we all have shows and we all curate things. Like, what do we have at the end of a show? Is we have our postcard, or we have the critique or the review or whatever. Or in your case, you have this book. Well, at the end of this experience, I had myself syndicated, and 5 million people were watching me behave in a very abstract, edited scenario.
What was it like watching it back?
So strange. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a, you know, when you are affected by something, it's not the past that you're affected by. It's the future. You're kind of standing in the center of a compass, watching how yourself be documented and syndicated, and you don't know what you said or what they're going to show you saying.
Right.
I didn't have cable, so I was never even able to watch it privately. So I was always going over to a friend's house to watch myself.
But I thought you came across really nicely. Like, you seemed so elegant and smart, and your work was amazing. And I think you came across, I mean, it made me admire you even more. Like, what did you think you were, you know, did you like it?
I loved the fact that I was part of this really bizarre experiment.
Yeah.
And I loved the fact that even now it gets, you know, you think about something like a reality TV show being in America, but then after that it's sold to different countries. So, like, it went, you know, it's gone to, I think, Korea and different places. So I'll get sort of Facebook requests from people in different parts of the world as it gets syndicated. It just keeps getting sold and moved around. I liked the producers, and I liked to make my work. And just like anything, they're going to set up a narration to sort of have a conversation that there's a conflict, but nobody digs a deeper hole for themselves than yourself.
Right.
I mean, the spaces in that experience for me where I felt odd or awkward or uncomfortable, you know, I had the shovel, right?
Right, right.
I was liked, and I was built to be liked. And so, and I don't know what they expected of me, but I believe I surprised them a little bit, especially since I showed up to my audition in, like, cowboy boots and a floral dress. And just not that I was tricking anybody, but I really, you know, it's such an odd process to get onto this show. Like, they have to do a psychological evaluation and all of these things. And I liked to know what conditions that I will make my work under. And because it's such a short amount of time, you're almost making the facades of the work that you want to make.
Right. You know, you just don't have time.
You don't have time. And even with that final show, I felt like I was building a conversation where one of the most important mediums in the room was how it was going to look on reality TV. Because reality TV, as a medium, like if it were like a pigment or a space or whatnot, you know, it does make things kind of magical, right? Like, how many people go through the Guggenheim in a month? You know, that's how many people sat down in their living room and saw me dressed like a rabbit or draw my friend Nicole naked or do whatever it was that I was going to do that day with a microphone, you know, connected to my body.
Yeah.
And no internet, no books, no music. Like, who am I under those conditions? You just, like, you travel and in your life, and that's the gift and that you give yourself. And it was almost a very, very abstract way of traveling.
Yeah, well, it's almost like an art project all on its own, really.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And just watching a group of intelligent people who are really secure in their medium, being, you know, filming and audio and lighting and all these things, and then dealing with 14 artists, like, you know, or people masquerading as artists or whatnot. Like, it's definitely, it's a different kind of person. And, you know, artists know that it takes other artists to make work. You have to collaborate. You have to work together. It's not, you know, it's not a competition.
Right. Well, and then you add exhaustion and all sorts of things like that into it, too. And I'm sure it's, I just found the whole thing fascinating just because it seemed like, art school under major pressure, you know, with a time pressure and cameras on you. And yeah, anyway, I just am fascinated by the whole thing. And I just think it's so, love picking your brain about it.
It was really just timing and luck. And I was surprised that I just started doing these very, very ritualistic things, like sweeping the space around my studio every time I got to my studio. And I still do that, like show up to my studio and sweep, because when time is kind of taken away from you, it can make you very nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that I'm the second best artist of the how many people who auditioned and the 14 people that got on. I just think, you know, I don't know if I just didn't want to pack up and go home, or I don't know what I wanted.
Right, right. That's interesting, the sweeping thing. So is that your way of sort of, you were saying, like, in a way, just taking back the control of time? Like, instead of getting running into the studio and being like, oh man, I got to start making things right now. It's like, no, I'm just going to take a breath and take the time to sweep, and then I will make.
Yeah, and I wash my hands too, which is, you know, pretty much a universal, you know, switch.
Right.
Wash your hands, sweep your floor, you know? And so, yeah, there was this kind of, you could see the people that were getting affected by that franticness.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like taking back time. Like, this is my space. This is my time.
That's just good advice for like day-to-day making, because I feel like that when I, you know, actually have a window of time where I can work on something, which is rare, but when I have that time, I feel a bit panicked that I need to, you know I only have 2 hours. So it's like, well, just hurry up and go. And then you're not starting from a good, calm place. So maybe I should get a broom.
Yeah, get a broom. It's cheap.
A broom also, and some hand soap.
Yeah, you know, water. What I think is interesting is that space is so much a part of studio practice. It's like, you can have a small space, you can have a big space, you can have a, you know, you can be a hoarder. You know, everybody is super different. But it is part of making work is procrastinating, for sure. Mm-hmm. And allowing yourself to procrastinate is important. And so sweeping was kind of like this form of procrastination. I did not need to sweep. Like, there was somebody already sweeping our space. But in terms of just giving myself a task that allowed me to procrastinate instead of like sitting there and spacing out, because I knew if I sat there and spaced out that I would kind of be caught spacing out, you know, like, it's not, and which is what I do in my studio, you know, because there's no point in starting and ruining all your expensive material or going through paper when you're not on the money.
Right.
Like, doesn't matter if you're writing, it doesn't, like, time is part of the, you know, part of what, the material, space is part of the material. Mm-hmm. And,
that's really good. That's good advice. I'm going to steal that.
Okay.
And so speaking of making things, you just got back from China.
Yes.
Tell me about that. So that was a residency?
It was a great residency.
And how long were you there for?
I was invited for 2 months, but I went for 20 days.
Okay.
I like to sort of do maiden voyages to places like that. I just really wanted to see if I would feel productive and feel the residency up before I committed to 2 months. They actually invited me back next year for 2 months, and I will take them up on it.
Oh, good.
It's called the Guanlan Original Printmaking Base, and it's 3 hours out of Hong Kong, so you can, you know, take transportation to Hong Kong. And so, yeah, it's just really, it's a 300-year-old village, and they take care of your food, and you stay in this beautiful, like, there are these beautiful archaic apartments, and, you know, it's a lotus fields and frogs and birds, and
it's so amazing. I'm sort of following along. Oh. What was that?
I don't know. Somebody laughed at me. It's really loud.
He's having a really good time at the coffee shop today, that guy.
Yeah.
I was sort of following along on Facebook and seeing all the photos. And the work that you're doing now, is that still top secret? Or have you put that out into the world now?
I'm having a show of that work with the Belcher Art Space, September 18th, the hotel drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little bit funny. So I was doing all these drawings. Like, I had asked a hotel to let me stay in one of their rooms on, like, Monday so that I could make work in a neutral space, as neutral as a hotel can get. And I just ended up making these hypersexual drawings. I mean, they're just really, like, erotic drawings. And in order to put them on social media, I kind of started spilling ink over the places that would keep me from being able to post them,
yeah,
which made them more adult and more erotic because they were veiled in this pigment. So then I thought, oh, I was doing them so compulsively, like, not compulsively, but just, like, they were really spilling out of me. And so I just started really making almost like a wall, like making a hashtag of them. And then when I was about to go to China, I had been taking screenshots of people fucking, like these, you know, pornography videos, so that I could get hands and feet really beautifully, kind of a little bit more detailed drawings that from these more calligraphic images.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my friend clear off my, I was like, hey, can you make it so that my computer is really speedy when I get to China? And it's so terrible. He took all my images and he put them on a hard drive, and I don't know what happened, but all of my images fell out of their folders. So it's just like, I have no idea what's my hard drive. Like, I cannot even deal with it. So and all I had on my desktop was this folder of people fucking, right? So I get to China. We're not, it's illegal, right? There's no Google, there's no Facebook, there's no Instagram. And this is, it's sort of like, well, here we go. Right, this is what I got. You know, literally, like, the folder is people fucking. Like, that's the folder, right? So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely working with these printers was funny because it just, my drawings started off very much just line work of people having sex and then built it up to aqua tints and litho plates and then silkscreen to sort of make that ink spot. And
what did the printer guys think?
The girls just kept saying, so sexy, and like laughing really hard. So sexy.
You know? Oh my god, there's the title of the series.
So sexy. Yeah. So you know, I've been printing with Landfall Press for almost, my god, since I was like in my early 20s. And so I don't really even consider myself to be a printmaker, but I love making prints with professional presses. I love that kind of overseeing of navigating how to work with different people. And I really like, I like being, I like navigating working with people to make something. Mm-hmm. And so just, in, and you can probably understand this, like, let's say there's like Lois, Tom, and Bob, right? You like working with those people. Well, you kind of find those same three people wherever you go in the world, and then you make a team with them, and then you work with those kinds of, that person, those three people, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and so you just, you find out who's good at what, and then you start talking to them about what you want to do, and then you make something amazing. And so I made these prints, and there's a master calligrapher there, so he writes the title of your prints, and I named each piece after, each print after a kind of sheet. So it's muslin, satin, silk, you know, like, yeah, and cotton. So every title is named after a kind of material that you would sleep on.
Wow, so beautiful. And so the show is in September?
Yeah, and the gallery, it's the Red Star, and they're going to, they've actually partnered with a hotel that I've been using as a studio.
Yeah.
The Hotel Phillips. And it's a boutique hotel, and they are actually going to build a hotel room inside of the gallery to show the work.
Oh, that is amazing.
Cool.
So cool. Can I show any of those images or not yet?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, good. And I'm going to put up some of the images from your final work of art show, too, because that was so, so good. And, of course, there's the nipples.
Right.
Your patented nipples. I read that on Facebook somewhere that one of your friends had said you always, yeah, what did he say? What was his, that you
he
can't.
He was like, don't ever go abstract. You're so good at painting nipples. Like, you're just so good at it. I was like, all
That's right. And then one day I was doing collages. I was actually doing one of the unblocking projects from Creative Block, and where you just chop up random shapes and make compositions from them, and I started doing a whole bunch of nipples, and I couldn't not think of you. So there you go. You're welcome. And so let's see, how much time do we have left? Oh, we're running out of time. I'm gonna ask you the speed round. Ready?
Okay.
These are just super fast questions. Get to know you questions, and just answer them as fast as you can. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Favorite cocktail?
Old fashioned.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Today, New Orleans.
Ooh. Name an artist, dead or alive, that you'd like to hang out with.
Josephine Baker.
Ooh. If you could change your name, what would you change it to?
I wouldn't.
I knew you were going to say that. That's the end. That's the last question. I put that in there, and I thought, she's going to say it. Are you kidding? My name's Peregrine.
No,
like,
right.
Why would I ever change that?
Best birthday present ever.
I love it. I think that's it. Unless there's any crazy random things you want to tell me.
Okay, so this morning I was on Facebook, and that crown, the glass crown that
yes.
you posted,
mm-hmm.
I own that.
No.
Yeah. So you posted that yesterday. That's Kate Clement's work, and that's mine.
You own that one?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Can you please take a picture of yourself wearing it and send it to me?
No, it's too fragile, but I will take a picture of it in my studio.
Okay. Is it under glass?
It's glass under glass, yeah. I had a cloche made so that it wouldn't break.
Oh,
good. Really, it's so fragile, and yeah, she's
that's
a great
amazing.
Artist.
Amazing. So do you know her?
Yeah. The art world is pretty small.
Yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, the fact that, like, I posted about that yesterday and we were talking today.
I know. I looked at it and I was like, that's mine. Cool. Yeah, so.
Wow. Yes, can you please take a picture of that and I'll put it in the post?
Of course. I'll do it today.
That's so cool. Well, thank you so much. I was, like, total having fangirl moment before I called you, and I was all nervous, and so happy to finally, like, feel like I know you a little bit better and hear all your awesome stories, and we'll have to do this again.
thank you for publishing our work.
Oh, God, of course.
Like, all of us are good. Like, after we're gone, your book is one of the things that'll be behind, left behind, you know? So it's always such an honor to be in print, and I really appreciate the effort and time that you spent making it so awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. You're going to make me cry.
Oh, that's not my intention, but yeah, thank you. You did a great job, and it's so fun to have people say, oh, I saw you in that great book, and to see it around.
Oh, my gosh, that's crazy to me. For everyone that's listening, if you have Creative Block, go and read Peregrine's interview. She's on page 157. It's like poetry. All of your answers were like poetry. And I even said that to my editor. I was like, wow, not only is her work stunning, but your words are literally like poetry. Your first answer is stunning. So everybody has to go and read that. Maybe I'll post it on the site.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You too. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Isn't she amazing? I really was so nervous to talk to her. I was afraid that the fangirl in me would freeze up. But thankfully, she's not only insanely talented, but also very, very sweet. And obviously, so sexy. All right, I'm off to record the next episode. It will be up next Saturday. Thanks again for listening. Bye.